We're on Daf Chaf Hei Amud Aleph, and we're trying to derive the Isur Hana in Basa B'chol. The Torah doesn't say anything other than Bishul, that you're not allowed to cook milk and meat together. The Torah repeats that a number of times, but it says nothing neither about the Isur Achila nor about the Isur Hana. So the Gemara says that the Isur Achila is derived from a Gzeir Shava of Kadosh Kadosh, that in the parasha of Basa B'cholov it says that we are Anshei Kodesh, and in the parasha of Trefa it also says that we have to be Anshei Kodesh. So we derive the conclusion that just like Trefa is Asur B'Achila, so too Basa B'cholov is Asur Be'achila. Kiyam Kadosh Ata Hashem Lashem Elokecha. And there it says, Anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li. However, how do we derive the Isur Hana in the case of Basa B'cholov? And here we have the famous Kal V'chomer of Isi Ben Yehuda. And that Kal V'chomer is built on Orla. Orla is relatively Kal compared to Basa B'cholov, and yet Orla is also Hana. And we derive the Isur Hana of Orla from the fact that it says Lo Ye'ochel. And now we apply that Isur Hana to Basa B'chol with the Kal V'chomer. Why is Orla considered Kal vis-a-vis Basa B'cholov? Because in the case of Orla, he had every legal right to plant his tree. There was no Avera in planting the tree. And for the first 3 years of the tree, the fruit that is produced therein is considered Orla. In the case of Basa B'cholov, the Bishul itself is Mituav B'enei Hashem, as we discussed yesterday, and therefore that's considered Nevda Bo Avera. So if in Arla, which is low Nevda Bo Avera, the Torah says it's also Mano, how much more so in Basa B'cholov, which is Nevda Bo Avera, that certainly it should be also Mano. And here on the top of Chafei Amet Aleph, as we saw yesterday, the Gemara raises a pircha on that Kal V'chomer. There's a chumra in Orla which might justify the Isur Hana, and that's called Shelo Hoysala Shas HaKosher. And we discussed yesterday, I'll just summarize it today. What does it mean, Lo Hoysala Shas HaKosher? The din of Orla is such that as soon as the fruits blossom on the tree, from the moment of Chanata, they're Asur Be'achila U'Behana. In the case of Basar B'Cholov, we really have Heter. Both the Basar is Heter and the Cholov is Heter. And then we cook them together, and magically what pops out is Isur. So you have something which in and of itself is Heter, and it becomes Isur. So therefore the Gemara says the following. If you want to know which is Kal and which is Chomur, then I'm going to tell you that in the case of Arla, there's a reason to be Machmir. There's a Chumra in Arla that doesn't, and on the contrary, in the case of Basa B'cholov, there's a parallel Kula. What's the Kula in Basa B'cholov? That basically we start with Heter. So the Torah says at some point you cooked it together, it becomes Asur. But in the case of Arla, it was always Asur, from the inception, from its birth. It wasn't Heter that became Isur, it was always Asur. And therefore the Torah is more Machmer again on something that's always Asur, and that's why Arla is Asur Manor, the Basa B'cholov, which was Heter, and then it became Asur. There the Torah would be more lenient, and possibly would relieve you of the Isur, Hanna. So the Gemara now looks for a case where it's Hoysalo Shas HaKosher, something which was Mutter became Asur, and nevertheless it's Asur Hanna. And the Gemara points its finger at Chometz B'Pesach. Chometz B'Pesach was Heter the whole year round, and now it became Asur on Pesach. And yet it's also Hana. So you see that the fact that there was a Shas HaKosher is not a Kula, it's not a leniency within the question, the context of Isur Hana. No, even though something was originally Mutter, like Chametz, nevertheless, it's also Hana. And that more or less plugs up the Pircha from the fact that Basa B'cholov Hoysala Shas HaKosher. So again, in the logical flow of the Gemara thought that Basu B'chalav might be mutaman, the Torah's mekil, because of the fact that Haisel Oshas HaKosher, and the Gemara quotes Chomitz B'Pesach to prove that the Haisel Oshas HaKosher element is not a factor in removing the Isur HaNoah. The proof for that is Chomitz, because Chomitz is Haisel Oshas HaKosher, it was mutah, became Asur, and yet the Torah imposes an Isur HaNoah. So the Gemara says, well, maybe there's a chumrah in chametz. The Torah is very machmir in chametz, in contrast to Basu B'chalav. If somebody violates the Isur chametz b'Pesach, then what's the punishment? He gets karetz. In the case of Basu B'chalav, the punishment is no worse than malchus. It's a classic lav. There's no chiyuv karetz. So now the Gemara needs to find the following. It needs to find something which is a classic lav and haisa lo shas hakosher, and yet it's asur b'hanoah. And the Gemara stretches its arm out to klai hakerem. Klai hakerem is ein onish kares. It doesn't have the chumer of kares. It's haisa lo shas hakosher. In that sense, it's very similar to Basu B'chalav that had a shas hakosher. Before you planted this tzemach with a vine, the vine was mutter, the tzemach was mutter, everything was mutter, it's like Basu B'chalav, and yet the Torah has an Isur HaNoah in the case of Klai HaKerem. And therefore we prove that you can have something which does not have a chiyuv kares, it doesn't have that chumra, like chametz does. Klai HaKerem is a classic lav, and it only generates malchus. And even though it had a shas hakosher, nevertheless, it is asur b'hanoah. And yesterday we pointed out that L'chor, the Gemara could have derived the Isur HaNoah in Basu B'chalav straight away from Klai HaKerem, but that would have been a Tzad HaShoveh, that would have been what we call a Binyan Av. The Gemara is looking for a Kal V'chomer, and therefore the Gemara wants to derive it from Arla, because in the case of Arla, where there was no Nevda Ba'Avera, and nevertheless the Torah imposes an Isur HaNoah, how much more so where there was a Nevda Ba'Avera, like in the case of Basu B'chalav, also in the case of Klai HaKerem, and yet, how much more so there should be an Isur HaNoah. Again, in Klai HaKerem, I don't need Arla to prove and establish the Isur HaNoah in Klai HaKerem. That we know because Pentuk Dash HaMaleah, and the Torah requires that you burn Klai HaKerem. But in the case of Basu B'chalav, there's no indication whatsoever in the Torah that Basu B'chalav is asur b'hanoah, and therefore I need the Kal V'chomer from Arla. The only problem is I have a pirach on the Kal V'chomer, and I'm going to use Klai HaKerem to reject the pirach. In other words, don't point to Arla and say that the reason why Arla is asur b'hanoah is because of the chumrah of lo haisa lo shas hakosher. I'll even show you something which haisa lo shas hakosher, namely Klai HaKerem, and yet it's asur b'hanoah. And now the Gemara stands up and asks Akashan Abaye. As we learned yesterday on Daf Chav Dalet Amud Beis, Abaye says there's an unbelievable, unique chumrah in Klai HaKerem. And the assumption is that chumrah applies exclusively to Klai HaKerem. And that is that Yechayiv even Shalo Kederech HaNa'asam. So for example, if you would take Klai HaKerem and use it as a salve on your injury, on your body, then even though that's not the normal way you would use Klai HaKerem, nevertheless you'd be Chayiv for the Isur HaNoah mi Klai HaKerem. So Klai HaKerem has a chumrah that we don't find in other Isur HaNoah. All other Isur HaNoah is only Kederech HaNa'asam. But in the case of Klai HaKerem, Yechayiv even Shalo Kederech HaNa'asam. And therefore you don't have the right to quote Klai HaKerem as your paradigm to teach you anything about Basu B'chalav with regard to the Isur HaNoah. The Torah, in the case of Klai HaKerem, was much more strict and demanding about Klai HaKerem. And I'll prove it to you from the fact that according to Abaye, Klai HaKerem is Asur B'hanoah, even Shalo Kederech HaNa'asam. Once you have that Chumrah, that's why the Torah was machbir and slapped an Isur HaNoah in the case of Klai HaKerem. But in the case of Basu B'chalav, where presumably you're only chayiv if you have HaNoah Kedarko, Kederech HaNa'asam, and you don't have that Chumrah of Shalo Kederech HaNa'asam, there the Torah would be lenient and would absolve you, so to speak, from any Isur HaNoah. So Abaye turns around and he says, no, that's not a valid pircha. Why? Because for the same exact reason that Klai HaKerem is asur even Shalo Kederech HaNa'asam, Basu B'chalav is going to be asur Shalo Kederech HaNa'asam. Now, the premise of the pircha was that there's a kula there's a kula we're more lenient in Basa B'chav than we are in Klai Akerem. If we compare Basa B'chav to Klai Akerem, as far as Hana is concerned, we have a chumrah in Klai Akerem that's unique, and that is that Klai Akerem, according to Abai, is asur, even Shalom Kederach Hanasam. Now the Gemara turns around and says, no, even Basa B'chav is asur in Shalom Kederach Hanasam. And for the very same reason that Klai Akerem is asur Shalom Kederach Hanasam. And that is because it doesn't say the word achila, the derivation of the requirement, the condition of Kederach Hanasam is inherent in the word achila. Whenever the Torah enjoins you from achila, achila means kedarka, and that tells you that the achila has to be kedarka to be chayv for achila, the hana has to be kedarka when you derive hana from it. But in the cases of number one, Klai Akerem, and number two, Basa B'chol, where the Torah omits the word achila, then the Iser hana is all-inclusive. Any benefit that you get, even if it's an unusual kind of method of using the object, but you benefited from it, that's your subjective hana, you violate the Isra hana. Because there's no reason to assume that an Isra hana is limited to kedarka. The Torah says hana, which means any benefit from you get. The exception to the rule, so to speak, is the word achila. Whenever the Torah uses the word achila, the Torah is employing that word in order to teach us it's got to be kedarka, and therefore in other isuri hana, like for example chametz, where the Torah used the word achila, or for example in Shara Niskal, where the Torah used the word achila, in those, or in Arlo, where the Torah used the word achila, in all those cases you're only chayev for kedarka if you do it in the normal way. But in the cases of Klai Akerem and Basa B'chol, these are the two cases where the Torah did not use the word achila, and therefore you chayv even for shalom kederach hanasam. Then the Gemara goes off on a tangent, and the Gemara wants to analyze the Makshan, the one who raised the objection against Abai. What was he thinking? Why did he think that Basa B'chol is only chayv kederach hanasam? After all, the word achila doesn't appear, and Abai himself, when he justified his chumrah in Klai Akerem, that you chayv in Klai Akerem even shalom kederach hanasam, he based it on the fact that the Torah omits the word achila in Klai Akerem. So therefore, logically, we should have drawn the same exact analogy, same conclusion in the case of Basa B'chol. It doesn't say Achila anywhere. So the Gemara explains it does say Achila. Where does it say Achila in Basa B'chol? Because the Isra Achila in Basa B'chol is derived from where, Rav Osai? Exer Shavah to Treifa. And in Treifa, the Torah uses the word Achila. And therefore, just like in Treifa, the word Achila means it's got to be Kedarka the regular way, so too we take the word Achila from the parasha of Treifa and we graft it onto the parasha of Basa B'chol, as if the Torah says, thou shalt not eat Basa B'chol. And therefore, the same restrictions and conditions that apply to Achila in Treifa will therefore ipso facto apply in Achila of Basa B'cholav. It's got to be Kedarka. Comes along Abai and he says, no, it doesn't say Achila in Basa B'cholav. It says Achila in Treifa. It says Anshei Kodesh Tiyan Lachem, which gives us Gzeirah Shavah. We derive Isra Achila in Basa B'cholav from Treifa, but it doesn't mean that it's the strict Isra Achila as it applies in Treifa. In Treifa it has to be Achila because the Torah says Achila and it's got to be Kedarka, but in Basa B'chol it never says Achila, and therefore you chayv even Shalom Kedarka. So basically the issue here between the Makshan and Abaye, and then the thrust, or shall I say the kishkis of this Machlokis, is how do you learn this Gzeirah Shavah? We have a Gzeirah Shavah between Treifa and Basa B'chol, Kodesh Kodesh. One way of learning it is to take the words of the Pasuk in Treifa and graft them on to the parasha of Basa B'cholav. Hence, we have the word Achila in Basa B'cholav, and therefore you're only chayv for Kedarka. The other way of learning Gzeirah Shavah is to say, no, the Gzeirah Shavah is teaching me the concept, the general Isur, but it doesn't mean that I take the Pasuk and the words of the Pasuk, and now I weave it into the parasha of Basa B'cholav. Nowhere, says Abai, does it say Achila in Basa B'chol. So that leads us to the sugya for today. That was a quick review of yesterday. Again, Rav Osai, what we have to do is, I just summarized an hour shiur. What we have to do is we have to make the following summary, and then I'll answer questions. And that summary is that according to the Sheet of Abaye, there are two Isuri Hanah, not one, but two Isuri Hanah, which are Chayav on Shalom Kederach Hanah Asam. Number one, Kloya Kerem, and number two, Basa B'Cholov. What's common to both of them is that the absence of the Torah omits the word Achila. If we don't employ the word Achila, we don't have this requirement of Kedarka. So if I take Basa B'Cholov and I use it for medicinal purposes, or if I take Kloya Kerem and the same, then according to Abaye, I violate the Israel. Michael?
If we seem to have proved that Basur Cholov is not allowed to have any hanok from it, maybe either just direct or indirect, but whatever, you can't have hanok from
Kedak or shalok, right? Correct.
How much more so then should we not be able to eat it? Why can't you just say that? If you can't have hanok from something, from Basur Cholov, how can't you? Surely you can't eat it. Because eating is much stricter than hanok.
Okay, so let's go back to basics. Again, the Torah says you're not allowed to cook basa b'cholov, correct?
Okay.
The Torah nowhere prohibits us from eating basa b'cholov.
Doesn't say it, right.
Now, the question is the following, and that's Michael's question. If we're going to derive, that's Isi ben Yehuda, the Isar Hanah of basa b'cholov from a kalvachomer from Arla, couldn't that same kalvachomer establish not only the Isar Hanah, but at the same time, the Isra Achila?
Yeah.
It's an excellent question. In my humble opinion, again, I would have to really research and see what the Rishonim say about this question. I did not see it here on the page. The answer is as follows. The Isra Hanah, by definition, has to be built or an extension of the Isra Achila. You can't take Arla and derive a Kal V'Chomer that just like us, Arla is Aser B'Achila, so to Basa B'Cholov is Aser B'Achila. Why? I mean...
No, I'm not doing that.
Oh. I misunderstood your question.
I'm saying that if we've established that Basa B'Cholov is Aser B'Hanah,
correct.
How much more so it should be also L'Achila?
Right, but so that's what I'm telling you, Micah. How do we know that Basa B'Cholov is Aser B'Hanah? We only know it from Arla.
Yes.
Oh, so the Kal V'Chomer of Arla makes sense once the Torah says, thou shalt not eat Basa B'Cholov. I can't use the Kal V'Chomer to say, well, Arla, which is less than Basa B'Cholov, is Asur B'Achila, and therefore Basa B'Cholov should be Asur B'Achila. Meaning, once I know that the Torah says, thou shalt not eat Basa B'Cholov, now I can introduce Arla with a Kal V'Chomer and say that if Arla is Asur B'Hanah, and it's lo nevdo ba'avera, right? Then how much more so basa b'cholov, which is aser ba'achila, and it is nevdo ba'avera, certainly it should be aser ba'hanah. But I have to start with introducing basa b'cholov as an entity into the membership club of Isur Achila. Once it's in the membership club of Isur Achila, now I can raise the question, can I upgrade it and jack it up to a level of an Isur Hanah? That's where Arla could come in. But Arla per se could not teach me a Kal V'Chomer. You know, as I can't say that anything that I violated some sort of Avera, therefore becomes Asur, it becomes Asur B'Achila. I'll give you an example. Me'ila. Me'ila actually is Muta B'Achila. What do I mean to say? That if, let's say, I was Moel B'Hegdesh, I used it for my own purposes, then that object becomes mutter as a result of me'ila. That's counterintuitive, because me'ila is motzimi day hegdesh, and it becomes chulin. Why am I mentioning to you me'ila? We're not learning kodshim now, but I think it's a great example of the following. You can't take Arl and say, well, look, in the case of Arl, you didn't do an avera, and the Torah says it's also. How much more so in the case of me'ila, where you did an avera, it'd be also. Not every time you do an avera does it generate an iser. But in the case of an iser achila, which is already, let's say, on the road to becoming an iser hanah, now I want to know how far did the Torah go? Did the Torah allow me to have hanah from it as long as I don't eat it? Here's where I can quote Arla. And I can say that Arla and Basa B'Cholov have something in common. They're both Isuri Achila. Now Arla went a step further and the Torah said it's Asur B'Hanah. Can I now derive that Basa B'Cholov should likewise be Asur B'Hanah? And the answer is, if I can introduce a Kal V'Chomer, then I can upgrade the Isra Achila to the level of Isra Hanah.
Because Arla is less Achomor than Basa B'Cholov.
Correct. And that's before the Pircha of Haisal HaShas HaKosher, which we're going to get into right now. Before that Pircha, Arla was a great mitzvah. You know, we like to plant trees. You know, on Tu B'Shvat we go out there and we plant trees. My wife and I, 40 years ago, we went out to a place and planted a tree in what is today one of the largest cities in Yehuda v'Shomron, which is called Malei HaTumim. We planted trees on Tu B'Shvat. A great thing. Yizum Gali Gali, and we'll plant trees on Tu B'Shvat, right? And that's wonderful. And yet the Torah says that for the first 3 years of the fruits, it's usur not only b'achila, but even b'anah. How much more so possible chav, which having established that source of achila based on the gzeirah shavah to treifa, now I can extend it a step further and say, well, nevda b'avera, not only are you osur b'achila, but you also violated the isur bishul. Again, we had a whole long discussion about that yesterday. Then certainly the Torah would clamp upon you in isur anah. In Arla, where you had every right to plant a tree, and yet it's osur b'anah, how much more so possible chav? But why do we reject this kal v'chomer? And the answer is because it's something called Haisala Shasa Kosher. What does that mean? That in the case of Basa Macholav, despite the fact that Nevda Ba'avera, and that's a big Chumrah, it has a Kula. And the Kula is that basically your two ingredients, the combination of which produce the Isur Basa Macholav, are both Heter. There's Cholav and there's Basa. And the Cholav is from a Behemek Shera. If it's not a Behemek Shera, then it's not Basa B'Cholav. And the meat has to come from a Gedi, which is an animal that's kosher. It's a Behemek Tahora. Everything is Heter. So Torah says, you know what? Don't put these two things together. They're sort of mutually exclusive. They belong to two different categories, meat and milk. You know, today we feel it's almost intuitive. You know, who would think of meat and milk? But when you, but the Rambam, when he writes the Mordei Vukhav, why can't you mix meat and milk? You know, that's a gzeiras hakosav. It's a chok. It's not something that we can understand. So you have heter and heter, and boom, the combination of which produces yeast. So that's a big cool. Why would the Torah go far and clamp down a separate chiyuv, in this case, for violating Hanah in the case of Basa B'Cholav? And Orla doesn't have that kula. Orla, from the very moment that the fruits on the tree were produced, meaning they emerged, and that's called Chanot, as we discussed yesterday, where the blossom falls off, and now you begin to see the fruit. That fruit is already Orla. So from its creation, from its birthday, it was Asur already. That's a Chumrah and Orla. In Basa B'Cholav, the birthday of Basa B'Cholav is the birth of the Cholav and the birth of the Basa, each of which is Heta. That's called Haisalo Shasa Kosh. Now the Gemara ultimately needs Klai HaKerem to bolster or support and maintain the Kal V'Chomer from Orla. Now let's look at Klai HaKerem. If we assume that Klai HaKerem is Haisalo Shas HaKosher, then it's exactly similar to Basa B'Cholav. It has the same reason of leniency, and yet Klai HaKerem is also Ba'anah, Pentuk Da Shamaleah. You have to burn it. So if Klai HaKerem is also Ba'anah, even though it's Haisalo Shas HaKosher, then Basa B'Cholav should likewise be also Ba'anah, even though it was Haisalo Shas HaKosher. And now the Gemara goes back to basics. And the Gemara says, V'lifach. So let's make sure now that everyone is on the same page. We're here on the top of Chav Hei Amid Aleph. And we're going to drop down, let's see how many lines. I would say approximately 15 lines. Let's see if we can figure this out. V'lifach is the last word in the line. The first word in the line is Shalokin. Can you count down? Does it make sense to say 15? I don't have an exact number. Yeah? V'lifroch? Don, you with me? V'lifroch? Yeah.
Quick question
for me. Yes, please. I'm so sorry, Jerry.
No. I just need to be refreshed on something from yesterday. We talked about juices.
Right.
For the fruits.
Right.
Why is that not an Isra Hanah?
So there are two explanations for that. The original explanation is that's shelo keder chanos. Again, you and I might drink strawberry juice from now until doomsday, as I told you in a neighborhood called Seaside in Cape Town in South Africa. I mean, people wait online to buy this kosher strawberry juice. But back in the day, you ate strawberries. You didn't enjoy strawberries by converting it into a liquid. That's one approach. That implies the principle called Shalok Kederach Hanosim. Shalok Kederach Hanosim means I look at the object and I say, what is the normal way you enjoy that object? What do you do with chelev? You pour it on the skins of a hide and you soften it down. Now you want to use chelev as a reti on a makah, that's shalok kederach hanosim. What do you do with pomegranates and dates and figs and strawberries? What you do is you eat it as is. Now you want to get hanof from it by squeezing out the juices. That's shalok kederach hanosim. The object is not being used in the normal designated way. The other explanation is called zeh bi'alma. Now zeh bi'alma means the following: that when the Torah, and so much of Zeruim is built on this principle, the Torah says that there's an entity called a pri, pei resh yud, a fruit. What defines a fruit? If you know the answer to that question, then you know all of Zeruim. So I would give you about a decade of study to try to answer the question, what is a pri? Right? It sounds like a Shakespearean play. You know, what is a fruit? You know what I mean? What's in a name, right? What's in a name? And one of the conditions of a pri is that it's got to be what we call a basar ha-pri. Now, you know, you and I use the word basar to refer to fleshiks, to meat. You know, there's basar hakers, meat. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, you have tzli katef, that's basar. But the word basar in Chazal means anything that is the, you know, is the essence, you know, the main part, you know. Now, again, you'll ask me about fruit orange, you know, oranges that are grown for the purpose of juice. Yes. Juice oranges, whole nother discussion. You know, for that you have to be a baki in Zeruim, you have to be a baki in Hilchas Brachas, you have to know whether. But the general rule in Peros, in defining a pri, is the following. Again, I'm not going to write it on the board, but if anyone who catches it, catches it. Mashkin hayotzim mehem lav kimosa. Which literally translates, the juices that come out of them are not the same as the pri itself. Otherwise known as zeh bi'alma. So if you ask me about the fruits of the juices of the fruits of Arla, the answer is that either it's shalok kederach hanosim or it's zeh bi'alma. The exception to the rule, and there really are two exceptions, is tirosh v'yitzar. The Torah says that when you extract the liquids from grapes, which is wine, or olives, which is oil, then it's mashkim hayotzim mehem kimosam. The mashke, the liquids that you extract, have the same exact status as the pri itself. Okay. So now we're up to the word velifro. So Gemara now re-examines one of the basic assumptions that we've been operating with. And Gemara says, v'alekli akem shekein lo haysolo shasa kosher. I told you that if you take a tzemach, you take, let's say, a branch of some sort of or a kernel of some sort of a vegetable or of a grain, and you plant it in close proximity with a vine, with vineyard, then each one unto itself is mutter. Right, I could have eaten the kernel of wheat. I could have eaten the grapes from the vine. But now I planted them together. It sounds awfully similar to what? What does that remind you of when I take two things, each one is hetter, and I put it together? Basar b'chov. It's much like a mirror image of basar b'chov, and they would both be shasa kosher. The Gemara says, name. The Gemara says, klayakem lohoi solo shasa kosher. And Rashi works overtime to try to figure out what the Gemara was thinking. Why does Gemara say that in klayakem lohoi solo shasa kosher? So Rashi explains that the Gemara is working with a fantastic principle. And I'm going to stand up for this because I get very excited about this. I get very emotional. I really do. The Gemara says the following. You take basar and you cook it with cholov. You take two objects, each of which is heter, and they become asar. The basar becomes asar and the cholov becomes asar. Not so in the case of Klai HaKerem. In the Klai HaKerem case, the original zera and the original Geffen, which means the stalk or kernel and the piece of vine, those remain mutter. They never become asur. What becomes asur is what's called the tosefes. What do we mean by tosefes? When you mix these two species, the tzemach and the geffen, together, something is produced as a result of that crossbreeding. That which is produced is awesome, but the original zera and the original geffen remains mutter. The only problem is, how do I separate the two? Because I now have a Tosefes, how do I separate the two? So the Gemara says that what basically you have is A plus B. You have Heter plus this Tosefes, which is Kalayim. What do you do when you can't tell the difference between A and B? You apply the principle of Bittul. And Bittul means that given a certain ratio, in other words, if you could figure out the weight or the volume of the Zera, and you could figure out the weight or the volume of the Gefen, and now there's something that's produced. Now you create a ratio between the original Zera and Gefen and the Tosefes. What is that ratio? So again, in Kol HaTorah Kula, that ratio would be, let's say, 1 to 2, if you follow me. Notice if I have two pieces of meat that are kosher, and I mix in a third piece of meat that's non-kosher, then I say that the third piece of meat that's non-kosher, I can't identify now, is batel. But in the case of kelayim, it's gzeiras hakosher, we don't know why, the Torah says that the ratio is going to be 1 to 200. Meaning, if there's a tosefes, let's say you had 199, and then you have a tosefes that jacked you up to 200, everything is kelayim. But when we say everything is kelayim, it's only kelayim because of the Tosefes. So I can't isolate the heter, but really what I have is a mixture of heter and isur. Oh, let's see if we can apply that to our sugya. If the original zera and the original gefen remain mutter, then we have a case of hoysa lo shasa kosher, right? Malakloya kerim shalohai soloshas. Oh, what shalohai soloshas kosher? Oh, what becomes awesome? Not the original zera, not the original gefen, but the tosefes. At what point in time, Rabbi Osi, did that tosefes become awesome? Happy birthday to you. On its birthday. Are you following me, Rabbi Osai?
No.
Okay, let's explain. In the case of Basar and Cholov, at what point does it become Asar?
When they're mixed.
Only when they're mixed. The original Basar and Cholov becomes Asar because of the mixture. But on their birthday, they were both Mutter. That's called Hoysalo Shasa Kosher. But in the case of Kelayim, on the very birthday of Kelayim, it was Asar. It never had a moment of Shasa Kosher. Why? Because the Zera remains Mutter, and the Gefen remains Mutter, and it's only the Tosefes that becomes Asur Klaya Kerem. Again, we may have a mixture, so we don't know exactly how to separate them, but if Lu Yitzuyer, we can separate them, then it's only the Tosefes that's Asur. When did the Tosefes become Asur, everybody? On its birthday. It emerged into this world and it was already Asur. That makes it similar to Arla. What happens with Arla? The very moment that the fruit is produced, we call it Kandata, on the first 3 years, it's Asur. So that object, which is called the Peri of Arla, never had a moment of Hechsher. In the case of Basar v'Cholov, that object which became Asur before the Bishul was Mutter. The Cholov was Mutter and the Basar was Mutter. And magically, the Torah says, again, to our chagrin, that which was Mutter became Asur. That's called Hoysa lo Shasa Kosher. Here the Torah goes very lean. But in the case of Kelayim, the two elements remain Mutter. Even after you plant them together, only the Tosefes is Asur. If that be the case, lo Hoysa lo Shasa Kosher. It never was Mutter. And that's what the Gemara is asking now. Give me just 2 minutes, Mike, because again, we have to see the whole picture. The Gemara says the following. The Lifroch, let's ask the following question. How can you derive the Isur Hanah in Basar v'Cholov from Klaya Kerem? Basar v'Cholov has a Kula. What's the Kula of Basar v'Cholov? Hoysalo Shasa Kosher, that both the Cholov and the Basar were Mutter in each in and of itself and now became Asur. So Heter Nefach Lios Isur, that's a tremendous Kula called Hoysalo Shasa Kosher. But in the case of Klaya Kerem, the heter remains heter. And this heter also remains heter. I'll read to you the translation here. Hare Gidulim Elu Nesar, the Gidulim means that which grows as a result of the crossbreeding, Nesru Mi Rega Shebo Liolam, which I call the happy birthday. Masha'enki Bebasu Becholov, She'adshenis Bashel Becholov, Hayamutur, Venimtso Shekelayim Chamurim Bibasu Becholov, because in Kelayim, from the moment that Kelayim came into the world and was produced, it became Asur, and the two elements that were responsible in their combination for producing the Kelayakarim, they remain Mutter. Michael?
My understanding of Kelayim is you have a vineyard, and then in this vineyard, you plant a seed of corn. And the corn starts to grow in the middle of the vines. That's right. Not crossbreeding. There is a but because of their proximity, it's called Kelayim. So what do you mean by what do you mean by joining together? They're not. At what point do they become joined together?
That's called Hashrasha, which is going to be the next sugya. What happens is, again, I don't know about corn. I'm not learning Kelayim now. But let's take a case of a kernel of wheat. I plant a kernel of wheat. That kernel of wheat at some point reaches the level of Hashrasha. Hashrasha means it becomes rooted. Let's say it takes 72 hours until it becomes rooted. That root, because of the close proximity to the Kerem, is made up of two elements, of the Zera and the Geffen. The two of them together become mushrash. They become somehow rooted in the ground together.
Oh.
And now what happens is something grows from that hashrosh. Whatever grows from that hashrosh is also, and it's also for the moment, that's what I call for the moment that it was created. If you could isolate, again, I don't know how to do this in reality, because again, we're going to have to talk about volumes, and we're going to have to talk about Bittul and A plus B, as we discussed before, but theoretically, on a conceptual level, if you could isolate the original Zera and isolate the original Geffen, those remain mutter. The problem is going to be that it's all tzimisht, it's all mixed up together, and therefore you have the Tosefes, which is also together with the Heter and the Heter, and if the Tosefes is very significant, and by the way, very significant in this case means 1 over 200, then the whole thing is also. But the whole thing is also only because of the Tosefes. And that means that whatever was mutter remains mutter, whatever became also from its inception, and therefore you cannot apply the yardstick of Hoysalo Shasa Kosher, because Hoysalo Shasa Kosher means that that which is also today was mutter yesterday. And that's not true. It's true in the case of Basa Mecholov, because the Basa and the Chol become Asur. And again, forget about percentages and bittul and all that. Let's say you have a piece of cheese and you cook it together with a piece of meat. The cheese and the meat together are awesome, even though each element was mutter itself. That's the kula called Hoysalo Shasa Kosher. The Gemara is arguing now, and we'll just in a minute we're going to reject this argument, that in the case of Klaya Kerem, it's not so that which you know, the input that created the Kelayim is itself also. No, that input of A plus B remains mutter. And that which was created as a result of this Kelayim, of this Netiyas Kelayim at the point of Ashrosha, that itself is also from the moment that it appears on the face of the earth. And now the Gemara is going to reject it.
I mean, I'll just say the fact that those two original items are mutter
it's going to be extremely relevant, Michael. Let's say if the Tosefis is less than 1 to 200. If let's say the Tosefis be 1 over 200 is already enough, but just to make life easier for ourselves, because Rashi says 1 over 199, but let's just make life easier. Let's say it would be 1 to 200.
Which way around?
In other words, the Tosefis is only 1, and the original Zer and the Geffen would be 200. The whole Gansa thing would be mutter. Why? Because now we're going to apply the principle of Bittul. Now, if you're going to apply the principle of Bittul, the principle of Bittul is only meaningful, it's only applicable if you have Heter beating up Isur. But you don't have any Heter here because the original Zera and the original Geffen became Asur. So the answer is no. they remained heter. And in that perspective, it's lo haisalo shasa kosher. Why? Because haisalo shasa kosher means when an object itself that's heter becomes us. And the Gemara right now assumes that the zera per se and the gefen per se, the two elements that made up kelaim, they remain mut. They're always out of the picture. Again, lemaisa, it could be that they'll become us, but only because of this tarovis, this mixture. And now the Gemara is going to backtrack. Why? Now let me just not explain to you technically why the Gemara has to backtrack from this position. Because we know A, that Basav Chol is Asav Anor. And we know B, that the Torah doesn't say anywhere that Basav Chol is Asav Anor. And therefore we know C, that the only way we can establish that Basav Chol is Asav Anor is based on a Kavu Chom from Allah. Now we know that Arla doesn't have a Shasa Kosher. And in that case, how can you derive the Yisra Adno and Bas B'chol from Arla when Bas B'chol has the Kula of Haisala Shasa Kosher? So the only way we can ever justify this Kal V'chomer, which is the basis for which we know that Bas B'chol is Asa B'Ana, and when next time you go by McDonald's, you got to be careful about smelling something, because maybe, I don't know if Reach is included in Ana, but maybe you have a problem of being Nene from Bas. How do we know that? So you'll tell me it's a Kal V'chomer Verola, but that's not sufficient. That's necessary, but not sufficient. For sure it's a Kal V'chomer Verola. But Arla itself would not justify the Kal V'chomer because Arla has no Shas HaKosher from the very moment the fruits grow on the tree. Right? In years 1, 2, and 3, it was Asa. So it was never anything that was Mutter that became Asa. Now we have to figure out, what about Klai HaKerem? How can you therefore substantiate this Kal V'chomer from all the based on Klei HaKerem? There's no comparison. Basav V'chol has a kula of Haisalo Shasa Kosher, and Klei HaKerem is Lo Haisalo Shasa Kosher because the Tosefis from the moment that emerges into this world was Asur. Amar Avad Baravo. We have to somehow defend the Kal V'chomer. Zoso Meris, from this Kal V'chomer we must conclude that Klei HaKerem. And here you have to add the word af. Af meaning not the nose, but af means even. Even ikram ne'esarim. Now let's translate the word ikram. Ikram means the zroim themselves. That klaya kerem converts the zroim into isur. It's exactly the same as what Rabosai? You're converting something that's inherently heter into isur. Why? Because af ikram, even the zroim themselves, nesarim. But from one moment, what is the moment of transition when the heter of the zera becomes asur? That's called hashrosha. At the very moment that the zera itself, the zroim themselves, the seeds and the kernels and so forth and so on, they become rooted in the ground of Geffen, of the Geffen, because of the close proximity to Geffen. At that moment, the zera and the Geffen themselves become Asur. And therefore, if that be the case, hold the hoyselem shasakosher kodem hashrosha. When I put the zera into the ground and the geffen is growing beautifully, each one into itself is heter. And now, as a result of hashrosha, when they become rooted together, the zeraim themselves and the geffen itself becomes klei hakerem. So you see that something that was mutter became aser, and therefore it's an exact parallel: two drops of water to basav cholav. Two drops of milk, maybe I should have said, and it becomes Hoyselem Shasa Kosher. Wow. I mean, this is an unbelievable. You know, we're not learning Kilayim. By the way, I daven here sometimes in a Sephardic shul. I met a young man who learns in a Kolel, and I asked him what he learns. And he tells he's learning Kilayim. So I said, Vosep is Klayim of all things. It seems like a little bit unusual kind of limud. He's a young man. He's not, you know, he's probably a fellow about 22, 23. So he says that you have to know Klayim for the Rabbanut exam. I never knew this. You know, we've been offering Rabbanut preparation here for 5 years.
How did they pass?
I don't know. I don't know exactly. Maybe they studied Klayim. I didn't know it.
I definitely started that yesterday.
yeah. Right. That itself is Kalayim. Okay. So in any event, the bottom line here is that And I'll read to you the, he gives a summary of Rashi here. He says, Hazraim vagefen shenizru yachad heim atzmam nesarim. After the moment of Hashrosh. Kodem Hashrosh, then they're each like separated. It's like each one is in a kli, each one is in its own vessel. And that's not called Lotizra Karmachal Kilan. But once they became mushrash together, that Hashrosh creates an Isur, not just on the Tosefis as we assume, but even on the Zera itself. And that means Heter Nefach Lios Isur, that's my terminology, which meaning it's Haisa Lo Shasa Kosher. Now we have a perfect analogy between Basa B'Cholav and Kalaya Kerem. Kalaya Kerem is Haisa Lo Shasa Kosher. Basa B'Cholav is Haisa Lo Kosher. In both cases, two elements, each in which unto themselves were Mutter, became Asur. And the Torah should have been Mekil. Well, I have good news for you, or bad news for you. That Kalaya Kerem is Asur Hano. And if Kalaya Kerem is Asur Hano, then Basa B'Cholav is likewise going to be Asur Hano. Ultimately, I'm going to derive it from Arlo with the Kal V'Chomer. Masiv Rav Shmaya. Now here, Abosai, I start this sugya with a shir malus, meaning I have to ask Hashem for help, and I pray to God that we'll get through this next piece of Gemara, because for this you have to mamish know Zerahim, and I know a little bit about Zerahim, but there's something called an otzitz nakuv and an otzitz she'eno nakuv. Which means the following. In modern Hebrew, atzitz, you'd call it, right? So you have a flower pot, and according to halacha, if there's a hole in the flower pot, all you have to do is take this flower pot and pass it over, you know, we're kind of close to Pesach, Passover, right? All you have to do is pass it over a karka, you know, something that's ground, earth, that now there's something growing in the karka, that's why it's going to be relevant to Goliath. And there's a yinika, there's an unbelievable concept here in halacha. Again, I can't tell you if it's biological or not, but somehow, through the airspace, through the avir, there's going to be a yinika in which there's a mix between the otzitz and that which is growing on the karka below the otzitz as soon as you pass over the otzitz over the karka. Again, it's only in what kind of otzitz? Otzitz nakuv. It has a nekev, it has a hole in the bottom. If it's an otzitz sheino nakuv, you can even take the otzitz and place it down on the ground. There's no yinika. So now what he does is, and this is going to be a mishnah in Masechta Kelayim, he takes an otzitz nakuv, and he's got zeraim. He has a tzemach growing in this flower pot, and the flower pot has a hole on the bottom. And hamavir otzitz nakuv b'toch hakerem. You know what I'm saying? They did something very, very idiosyncratic.
The whole of the kerem, the whole of the vineyard is otzitz, or only the bit where he's putting.
Yeah, it works like this. That
is it like tumah? It only goes straight up.
Yeah, it's even more. It's even less than tumah. What do I mean? What happens is that the otzitz is yonek from the karka. It's a one directional, you know, chad sitri, if you're familiar with that concept. So what happens is now that the otzitz and the zera and the tzemach inside the otzitz now is yonek from the gefen. And what happens? Now the Mishnah says, you have a problem, that this Zera is what? Is Kilayim. He says, I'm going to read to you the translation. He says, Machmas HaNekev, as a result of the whole, Yonku Azroim Sheba Otzitz, Derech HaAvir, Mikarka HaKeren, V'nimtza ShaZera Godel Im HaGefen. That the Zera somehow magically is growing with the Yanika of the Gefen. So you have the Zera or the Tzemach together with the Gefen, and now you have a serious problem. So here's where, just give me a minute, here's where the Mishnah establishes that ratio. Okay, what's the ratio? Im Hosif. Now again, you have something that's already growing in the otzitz. So what are you going to tell me? Are you going to convince me that now the otzitz is produced? What's being grown? What's growing in the otzitz is a combination? Is kelayim? What are you talking about? That's ridiculous. There's already something growing in the otzitz. Ah, the answer is there's a tosefes. That now the otzitz produces something more. It grows even further. That increment, that extra growth, is called kelayim. So the Mishnah establishes the following: Im Hosif Masayim, If as a result of Havaras Ha'otzitz B'toch HaKerem, now the Kerem, according to Halach at least, adds something to the Zera, and how much was added to the Zera, what is the increment, how much did the Zera produce, the Tosefes? Masayim. It means that one out of 200 was added to the tzemach in the otzitz. So the Rashi explains that the tzemach in the otzitz was the equivalent of 199. Again, it doesn't mean that we're going to actually see 199 pieces. He means in terms of ratio, it's going to be a ratio of 199. And now there's another tosefes of one to add to the 199, and that's considered a tosefes which is significant enough to create kilayim. Now again, what becomes osur kilayim now? Geshen, you're stuck with the havamina, which is good. It means I convinced you of the havamina. But the maskana is not like that. The maskana is that even the zer itself becomes kilayim, right? And that's why it's considered haisaloshasa kosher, right? Like just like the basa mechalav itself becomes also, so to the zera itself becomes also. But now I have to ask myself, well, how do I know that this zera was impacted by the havara? Meaning, how do I know that the kerem actually contributed to the production of the zera in the otzitz? And the answer is because I see a tosefes of 1 to 199, which means over the 200. Below the 200 ratio, and therefore it's us.
What do you mean you see?
Well, I think, again, you know, I'm not learning Zeroin, but I think what the Mishnah in Kalayim means is that, let's say the size of the Zera was X, whatever that X is. Uh-huh. Now I look at it, and I see X plus Y. If that Y is more than 1 over 200, or if, according to Rashi, it's even 1 over 200, that means that there was a significant enough Tosefes which came post the Havara, meaning as a result of the Havara over the Kerem, and then the entire thing becomes also, the entire Zera becomes Osur. Just 1 second, we're almost finished with the Mishnah. And then the Mishnah goes on to say the following, that if there's a Tosefes, then it's Osur. Rabosai, if the Gemara is telling us, if the Mishnah is telling us that because of this significant Tosefes that has a very significant ratio, again, you and I might think that 1 to 200 is not significant, but the Torah, and the you know, you have to go through all the drushas here, how we know 1 to 200, but in any event, if that's considered a significant amount, that means we're always looking at the relationship between what's called Heter and Iser, meaning it's not the way you told me that the Zera itself is Osir. No, that Zera was growing in an Otzit, so it was Heter Gomer. Ela what? Now that there's a Tosefes by virtue of the Kerem, now that Tosefes itself becomes Osir. I'll prove it to you. What happens if that Tosefes was 0.5 over 200, if you follow me. It was a ratio of less than 1 to 200. Then the whole thing would be mutter. So in other words, what we're doing is we're creating a ratio between Heter and Iser. Now you just finished telling me that once it's Kilayim and there was Hashrosha, everything is Asur. If everything is Asur, so then everything should be Asur. So therefore the Gemara asks the following question, Hosif in, Lo Hosif, Lo, if you didn't have that ratio. Right? In other words, you see clearly that the Oser, in other words, the Sivasa Iser, is the Tosefes. It's only because of the Tosefes that's mixed up, therefore it becomes Oser. But if you could cut out the Tosefes, it wouldn't become Oser. But wait a minute, you're telling me that once it was Kelayim, and once we reached that stage of Ashrasha, everything became Oser. Omar Rava, again, hopefully it'll all be clear in a minute. Omar Rava, Trey Kroiksiv, Ksivi. We have two psukim. Now, let's read the first pasuk. The Gemara is going to focus on one word in that pasuk, but I'm going to read to you the entire pasuk in Parshas Ki Teitzi. It says, Lo tizra kamacha kelayim, pen tigdash hamalea. And then it says, Hazera asher tizra utvua sakerem. The pasuk indicates two different things. One thing is called hamalea. Okay, Hamaleah, Pentigdash Hamaleah, And the other thing is the zera. And that is a stira. Is there's a contradiction in the pasuk itself. Why? Ksiv hazera, which seems to imply that the zera itself, which again, before it was planted close to a vineyard, was heter, and that itself becomes osur. And therefore the Torah says hazera, that the zera itself becomes kilayim. But then it says hamalea. The word malea indicates that which was added, the tosefes, correct? That's the gidulim shegaduli achar azria. Haketzad. How do you reconcile these two words in the same pasuk? They seem to contradict each other. The word malea seems to indicate that the extra growth is that is osur, and not the zera itself. Because if the zera itself became osur, then why did the Torah have to say hamalea? Hamalea means that which grew is osur. The zera itself is osur. But on the other hand, the Torah says hazera, which indicates that the zera itself is osur. Oh, says Rava, you know, I didn't reconcile this, and hopefully everything will become crystal clear after this. Shiram Aleph. Zorua meikaro behashrosha. Zorua uba. There are two different cases, and the two psukim, the two words in the pasuk refer to two different scenarios. Let's take scenario number one. That's called Zorua meikaro. What happened was, he took a zera and he planted it together with a gefen. So the original zria was in the kerem. And that means that as soon as it reaches the state of hashrasha, when these two seeds are rooted in the ground, at that moment, then what happens is that zera is called zera zorua uba. In other words, in this case, im hoya hazera zorua kodim lechein. No, that's going to be this. I'm sorry, I didn't put the comma in the right place again. Ha-ketzah. So the first case is hazera. When is the zera itself asur? That says the Gemara zorua meikara, and once you read to the stage of hashrasha, it becomes asur. So the zera itself has become asur because the zera itself never produced anything. From the moment that it started producing, it was already bahashrasha together with the kerem. It was already klaya kerem. And in such a case, the zera itself becomes asur. Now we have case number two. Zarua uba. What happened was, you planted the zera, and the zera is baruch Hashem, heter gomer, and it's producing. There's something growing in this zera. And then you added the element of kerem subsequently. And there the Torah says malea. Hamalea. What does Hamalea tell you? Hosif, if it adds to its gidol a ratio of 1 to 200 in, then that zera becomes osur. But lo hosif lo, then it's not mosif. So again, the case of Otis Nakuv is called in the language of the Shas Zorua Uba, meaning in the Otis itself, you already have a zera that was heter, and before you passed it over the kerem, it was already producing. Now, there was never a hashrasha in its inception before the zera was producing. Once the zera is producing on its own heter, then we have to judge and decide whether or not it becomes kelayim as a result of the input of the kerem through this process of havaras otzitz nakuv. And the answer is, we need a barometer. What is that barometer to determine whether or not the zera itself, although it was planted behetan, it was producing behetan, now became kelayim? That's going to be the yardstick of what? Of echad to masayim, of 1 to 200. Let's go back for a minute to Rav Ada bar Ava. Rav Ada bar Ava, if you remember, said, Zosomers kilaya kerem ikra nesorim, the zera itself becomes osur. He's referring to a case of Zorua meikara. He's talking about a case where the ikra zera was planted together with a kerem, and the Tchilas Hazria was in a kerem. If the Tchilas Hazria was in a kerem, that's called Zorua Meikaro, and as a result, we have Kilaya Kerem, which Rav Ada bar Ava classifies as Hoysalo Shas HaKosha, which means that the Zera itself, which was Heter unto itself, became Osir at the moment of hashrosh. So that's called hoel for Islam shasa kosher kodem hashrosh. However, in the case of Zorua Uba, where the Zera was planted on its own, and it's growing, and now you add the element of Kerem to it, there we want to know, to what extent was this admixture of Kerem, did it impact on the Zria, on the Gidul? And the answer is, we look at the Gidul, and we see how much Tosefis there was. If it's a significant amount, then it becomes Kilan. Okay, Rabosai, it's now about 9:30, am I correct? So what I want to just do is give you an introduction to the next sugya. The next sugya, from my perspective, is absolutely marvelous. Mamish marvelous. First of all, it gives me a little time to breathe because I'm familiar with this next sugya, as opposed to Zeroyim and Klai Kerem, which was a brand new experience for me. And the question is, we have three cardinal sins: Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shvichas Dam. And those sins will override what's called Pikuach Nefesh V'Chaybohem. So for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh, if somebody puts a gun to you and says, kill him or I'll kill you, you have to be willing to sacrifice your life. If someone says, worship an idol, you have to be willing to sacrifice your life. And the same in the case of Gilui Arayos. What about the case of what's called Atzei Asherah? In other words, this tree was worshipped as an idol, and now I want to benefit from that tree. The halacha is that Avodah Zarah, once having been worshipped, generates what's called an Isur Hanoah. Does that Isur Hanoah from Avodah Zarah come under the category, is it defined as Avodah Zarah? Or maybe Avodah Zarah is only worshipping an idol. Here I'm not worshipping the idol. I'm using an idol for my purposes. And I'm going to benefit from the idol. And the question is, in a Sakonis Nefashis case, where somebody is deathly ill, can you use, for medicinal purposes, to save his life, Avodah Zarah, something that was worshipped? Does that come under Avodah Zarah? Well, that's a separate category called the Isra Hanoah from Avodah Zarah, but it's not real Avodah Zarah. And that's what we're going to cover tomorrow. So I wish everyone
I want to know, we've been concentrating completely on the Zera in the pot. I want to know what happens with the Kerem that it's passed over.
Right, I think what happens is that somehow, because of the Nekev, if I understand correctly, the contents of the otzis sucks out the yanika and it draws the nourishment into the otzis. The kerem itself is not impacted.
There's no impact.
As far as I know, I'll double check a few tomorrow.
The otzis doesn't go down.
Yeah, it's remember I said it was like a one way street.
It's only a one way.
I think so. I'll double check a blineta for tomorrow if I get a chance.
Sure.
Okay then. So tomorrow blineta will talk about the three cardinal averos, you know, and what you're allowed to do to save a person's life.